Hello and welcome to the Original Content Podcast. I'm Anthony Ha.
I'm Jordan Crook.
And I'm Daryl Edington.
And this is the TechCrunch Podcast, where every week we review a new piece of original content, usually a new show or movie on Amazon, Hulu, or some other streaming service. This week we are reviewing Emily in Paris, a series on Netflix that's gotten some, provoked some interesting conversations and some even some skeptical comments from the very host of this podcast last week. We're watching this in part because one of our viewers suggested on Twitter that we review it. So yeah, let's just dive into it. Daryl, I know you actually binged the show, so talk a little bit about what you were expecting and what your response was.
Yeah, I didn't have super high expectations for it. I don't know what I was expecting. I mean, I didn't watch Sex and the City. I wasn't like a big Satsy fan.
Okay, let's not. No one's ever said that ever. So let's not with that. And then also, that actually surprises me. I feel like you would be one of those guys who could get into Sex and the City a little bit. Enjoy it.
I probably could. I just didn't really try, I guess, at the time. But I once saw Mr. Big outside of a restaurant in LA. That happened. So that's kind of fun. Yeah. He was drunk.
Ooh, that would have been fun. I wish you would have pulled out your Motorola flip phone or whatever.
Yeah.
You had
at the well, time. It wasn't that long ago.
Oh, your iPhone 11 X Pro, whatever the fuck they're called now.
But I don't know. I didn't have high expectations, especially after reading some of the early reactions and like seeing some of the, like, there's a New York Times article that we'll probably link somewhere about the French reaction to it. But I ended up really enjoying it. And I also, Tara reluctantly agreed to watch it with me, but then she really enjoyed it too. So then we watched it all in one day, wow, which was a lot, but it got us engaging, got us going.
It is also like only 10 episodes of a half hour show, so you could watch the whole thing in like 5 hours.
Yeah, that's true. It's not,
I didn't
like
realize they were
commitment.
Only half hour. I thought they were like 42 or something.
Nope, just 30 minutes.
But time flies when you're having fun, I guess, because I loved it too. I mean, love is a strong word, but I was fully engaged with it and thought it was like, there are some things that I definitely find problematic, and not even as like, I've been to Paris one time for like a total of 72 hours, so I'm not coming at it and saying like, oh, this is accurate or not accurate about the way French people are or do things or Paris is, but more just like general issues with things that I didn't enjoy about it. But overall, on the whole, I'll say that it was perfectly fine. It was good, clean fun. I enjoyed it and thought there were some really funny parts, and it kept things moving, but not in a way where, you know, sometimes in those Netflix originals, particularly stuff like this, where it's like relatively light fare, they can like over exaggerate like issues or problems and like get themselves in the weeds in a way that's super unrealistic. And I felt like they didn't kind of fall prey to that so much with this, right? Like, everything that happened felt like it made sense in the world that they had built.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't.
Oh, go ahead.
I didn't think anything was that outlandish in this too, which I think it was a strength of it. Because yeah, you definitely can see things where it's like, oh, the coincidences are too much or whatever. Like, there was, I guess, just the one big one around the relationship, but like, it's fine, especially within the constraints of the genre, right? It's like it didn't stretch disbelief for me.
Right.
Yeah. So the series is about, as you can probably guess, an American woman named Emily who moves to Paris. And it's partly because her boss very suddenly chooses not to go to Paris for work. And so Emily decides to take her place. And that sort of sets up a lot of culture clash things, because she's really done no preparation for this trip, does not speak the language, seems to basically know nothing about what life is like in Paris. And Yeah, that's basically, you know, that it's, it, and like Daryl, like you said, it's a show from the creator of Sex and the City. He also created the show Younger, which I've never seen, but I feel very connected to because they shot a lot on my street when I lived in Williamsburg. But like, I think part of that is like setting expectations of this is a, in a lot of ways, a romantic comedy show. And it's not meant to be like an accurate representation of, or at least a strictly realistic representation of what would actually happen in the situation. It's exaggerated. It's a fantasy in a lot of ways. And so in that sense, I think criticizing it for not necessarily being an accurate portrait of life in Paris feels a little bit besides the point. I do think the criticism that I agree with a little bit more is the fact that there's just a lot of cliches, and sometimes it does feel a bit like the whole plot of individual episodes could be like, what is the next sort of stereotype or very obvious culture clash moment we can have to Emily in this episode? And it's just almost like a catalog of American versus French culture 101, which over time as I got more used to it, it bothered me less, but I definitely don't think it's a great show. I'm not convinced that it's a good show necessarily, but it is very watchable. I did enjoy it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's all that matters, right? Yeah, it's enjoyable and you watched it, right? Like, yeah. That at the end of the day, I think Netflix really nailed it on that. Like, we can literally go into detail about all the things that are wrong with it, and we would end up with a really, really, really long list, even if we took the whole French bit out of it. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that every single one of us sat there and watched it and giggled and were like, well, I want to watch the next episode, right? Like, at the end of the day, like, that's what counts, I think. So
yeah, and I thought the caricatures of especially of French people were very enjoyable, which maybe makes me a bad person, but like I read that article about the French reaction, and I get it, and like, I don't think this is for French people, and I don't particularly care that they're offended by it. Like, I think that's kind of the intent of it. It's made for an American audience. You're supposed to empathize with the American character, and I feel like that's totally fine, right? Like, whatever. Totally. And as a slight outsider, like, I liked some of the things that were criticized about the American perspective too, right? But like,
yeah.
I think those were offered up too. Like, it was supposed to be a little bit of a, it was like a light chiding back at the American can-do workaholic attitude, and then like a gross and pretty awful send up of like French culture, but hilarious. So,
but like, also to be fair, it felt like in many ways Emily like respected, like, it's like aspirational in a way, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's lots to like sit there and be like, haha, like the dogs are shitting all over the street, and like the people who work out smoke, right? And like, this dude's like peeing in a public urinal, like, what the fuck is going on in Paris? But then at the same time, there's this like mystery and unattainable kind of quality to being Parisian that like Emily is constantly kind of striving after, which in many ways is like a compliment.
Yeah, but that's also a cliche, right? Like, it's like you go there for this worldliness that and romance and whatever. That's like, I like, not necessarily accurate either, right? So it's kind of like, but.
Well, I think they did an okay job with that bit too. Like, remember her like random guy that she meets at the party?
Oh yeah, like, that guy was good.
Teaching each other English and French, and she's like, "This is so magical." Like, honestly, could you imagine a more magical night? Like, this beautiful man, and you're like, "Oh, that's the word for eyes," and like, "Oh, that's the word for lips," and like, then suddenly he says something that's very off-putting, and you're like,
yeah,
the whole thing comes crashing down.
That was good.
I mean, it depends. Off-putting for her, I guess.
I don't know. I can imagine somebody finding the direct approach more effective.
Right.
It could work for some people, for sure. Like, whoa, curveball. I like that.
I would say, actually, the thing for me that is the most, like, the bit of the unrealistic part that I find the most eye-rolling, you know, again, because I'm not a Parisian and have, you know, spent a grand total of, I think similarly, probably like 72 hours or maybe a few. We had an event in Paris in 2017, and so I was maybe there for like 5 days or something. So I'm definitely not an expert on that. Most of my knowledge of Paris comes from movies. So my real objection is to their depiction of social media marketing, because one of the common threads in the show is that basically they'll treat Emily like she's this social media genius, but most of her suggestions just boil down to, what if we put this on the internet?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's literally, she's like,
well, she, yeah,
let's harness the power of social media, and what I'll do is I'll start an account and I'll start posting stuff, and suddenly I'll have 20,000 followers. It's like, can we talk a little bit about the how we got from A to B there? Because
she starts with like 20 followers, which for somebody who claims to be very online, like, I'm like, even if you just had a handful of friends and family following you, you would have more than 20 followers. So it starts off from this really unrealistically low point, and then within a couple weeks goes to this really unrealistically high point.
Yeah, her journey is ridiculous.
Pick up, but like, there's literally no mention of anything other than like these very generic buzzwords, you know, like maybe a clever caption, and that is supposed to garner 20,000. Like, no, that's not how that shit works. You gotta talk about like what follower bots did you use, you know what I mean? Like, just one or two mentions of some stuff like that I feel like would have maybe grounded it a little bit more. But even her, like, on the business side, not her personal Emily in Paris account, but on the business side, her ideas are like, it's revolutionary, you know? And she's like, I think you guys should make an Instagram account.
Yeah.
Like, wow. You know?
Yeah. Well, and then the French executives are all like, you fucking monster iconoclast trying to destroy our French way of life. And then when it like works, like, oh, I guess you're a genius. Your bold new ideas.
Yeah. Well, their motivations are awful throughout. Like, don't make any sense a lot of the times, but like, it's because they just follow their hearts, the French people. So, you know.
So my biggest objections, well, they're twofold. One is relatively minor because it's not actually an objection to the TV show Emily in Paris. But I read recently where the author of the book that this is based on, that's true, right? There's a book that this is based on.
Let's take a look at this Wikipedia article I have open. There is no credited book that it's based on.
So I forget who said this exactly.
Okay.
So this is, my objection is coming literally out of thin air. Don't really listen to me. But I saw it on Twitter yesterday. It really upset me. Someone said, Emily's supposed to be fresh out of college. And that's impossible because she, one, has a master's in marketing. And two, is obviously, like, at the very least, like, mid-level at the firm in Chicago before she ever even comes to Paris. So I actually think they cast it relatively well. I don't know what you guys think, but Emily to me looks like 29, right? Like maybe 30, takes good care of her skin.
Right. Well, because I assumed that she was 24, 25 just because so much, because the actress Lily Collins looks very young, although she's actually 31 right now, which I found shocking.
Maybe it was Lily Collins. That name sounds familiar. Maybe she's the one who said she's supposed to be straight out of
college. Or Darren Star, who's the creator of the show. But I mean, it makes sense to me that she is supposed to be maybe not, you know, 22 years old straight out of undergrad, but like maybe she got a master's, maybe is more mid-20s.
Yeah, Lily Collins has said that she believes her Emily in Paris character is 22 and fresh out of college.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I want to say she's like 22-ish. Like, what in the world? Like, are you stupid?
But here's the thing.
I kind of feel like that.
I do think the show gives you a lot of different signals about her age that are kind of conflicting, and that you're right that she, the fact that she must have some level of experience and seniority at this firm makes you think that she's got to be a bit older, but she also reads as incredibly unworldly, and which, you know, some people just don't travel and don't know a lot about, like, but the fact that she, like, every episode is her being like, oh my God, I didn't realize this thing. Oh my God, I didn't realize this thing. The fact that the way, and I mean the way that she's treated at the French marketing firm, also reads to me as like, you know, she's younger, they're treating her as a younger, more junior person, although some of that just comes from like the fact that they don't want her there, that basically this firm has been acquired by an American firm, and they, part of the stipulation of the acquisition is they take on somebody from the American office, but everyone there is just like, this is fucking bullshit.
Right.
But I thought of her as being like 24 or 25 just because she seems so overwhelmed by a lot of fairly basic cultural differences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's possible. It's really the master's degree that caught me up so much when, I mean, that puts her at least 24, not 22. And then also, even if the stipulation, because like, it was her boss that was supposed to go to Paris, who felt to me like a relatively high ranking official in the corporation in Chicago, right? Yeah. Like, so to sub Emily in my mind meant she's the lieutenant of this higher ranking official, and thus has probably been doing that job for at least 3-ish years, right? Like, has found her way into some line of succession or something where she makes more sense than, let's say, a peer of the boss, right? Or a counterpart to the boss. So I don't know. That's a thing to get in the weeds about that's not really that important, obviously, because Lily Collins is just out here doing whatever she wants. It's fine. Mm-hmm. The second thing that, like, it's not that I like hated it or anything. It's just the character of Min like polarized me a little bit, right? Mm. Like, in some ways she was super funny. Like, I thought that actress did a pretty good job of like nailing what is meant to be like a comedic relief, you know, character or whatever. But then on the other hand, I didn't like her voice, and for her to win China Pop Star, I like didn't, it was just like slightly above average in a way that like kind of bothered me. Like, you have, if you're going to use music that way in shows
and then like, show it too. Yeah. Like,
exactly,
it has to be
like, think about what's the guy, you guys, you know exactly who I'm talking about. He was in The Politician.
Ben Platt. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So if you're going to do that, then you put Ben Platt in there and you literally have him melt our faces off with his insane vocals, right? Like, you don't spend 2.5 minutes on LaVie and Rose that's just like a regular LaVie and Rose. Like, it's like, you know
and
what
it
I mean?
Was,
that really bothered me.
It, like, that scene really bothered me too, and it was partially because, like, I thought she did a very, I thought she actually did a job that was like probably more in line with the, I guess, idol type show aesthetic than like with, you know, a big brassy voice. But I was like, this sucks for this song. Like, this is not how this song is meant to be sung. And I don't think that these people in the square would enjoy it at all. I think it's like an atrocious rendition of it. And they would be like, ugh, like, gross. Like, what are you doing? So yeah, I didn't like that either. I thought it was weird that they like made a point of making that like a side story and then had her like again show off her voice a couple times, and it was just kind of like,
well,
no,
and
this
she did better with La Vie en Rose than she did with Chandelier, which is an incredibly difficult song to sing, and like she does not have the voice for it. So it just like bothered me a lot that I would have gone for it, right? Like, I would have totally been like, okay, she's got this controlling, very rich father. She left to go to business school, wiggled her way out of that. She's a nanny. She's a really great singer. But if you're going to do that, like, she better be a fucking really great singer. Otherwise, like, the whole thing just kind of, like, crumbles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All the leaps you've had me make are like, wait, what? Really? Like, I don't know. That just bothered me a little bit.
That's interesting, because I feel like that I haven't quite gotten that far yet, so I'm basically halfway through the season. I think I'm like one episode away from that, but I feel like that's part of this general thing in the show where, and it's in some ways related to the social media thing I was talking about, where it's just like people are so impressed by Emily, and I'm just like, you're fine. I mean, I don't like dislike you, but I also don't understand why people are acting like you're the most amazing person in the world either. And I mean, maybe you just accept that as the fantasy, but like it can sometimes feel a little bit mystifying or even a little aggravating.
Well, I do feel like, sadly, they save what is possibly the most creative move by Emily for the very end. I don't know if you agree with this, Daryl. But like the stunt she pulls at the end, like her big marketing strategy towards in the last episode is probably the most creative one that she does, or like the most impressive one that she does. And up until that point, it's pretty lame. And I will also say, like, and I don't know, maybe I would hate it the other way around too, but it felt like it could have been strengthened if some of the auxiliary characters were like slightly less hyperbolic. Like, I think the American actress Brooklyn Clark, I think her name is, like, that was right up against the edge of hyperbolic for me, like maybe just a tad overdone. Pierre Gâteau, the fashion designer, was probably over the top for me. The competing fashion designers were super over the top. There were just a couple characters where it was like, if you turn the volume down by 10%, like, but maybe it wouldn't have been as good that way. I don't know.
Right.
Like, you know, grass is always greener situation, but it just felt like kind of it took me out just a little bit.
Yeah, I think it I think it did require them to be a bit larger. Like, everybody had to be a bit caricatured and a bit larger than life in this for it to work, because it's relying a lot of shorthand to get things done. But especially to make it like as kind of like light and snackable as it is, I think.
Right, as opposed to like it would have become heavier, like slightly more burdensome if like Pierre Gâteau wasn't like a complete caricature.
Yeah, yeah. Like, Gâteau's just like he's got just enough. Like, he's just enough filled in that you do the rest automatically. You're like, oh yeah, right, okay, like this is that kind of character, right? And I think I think most of them are like that. I think and then the other ones similarly, like, are relatively empty, like the chef. Like, it's just like, oh, you're just handsome and like pretty nice. And like
Gabrielle, though.
Yeah, I do too.
Has nothing to him, but like,
right.
Yeah,
I'm like, oh, you're great.
Well, and he's one of those characters who, I don't think it's really a spoiler to say. So he's Emily's neighbor, who then turns out to be a chef at a nearby restaurant, and who then they, you know, fairly quickly on develop an attraction. He was one of the characters where I was like, I don't understand why you're putting up with her so much in this. I mean, clearly you're just like very attracted to her and into her, but like that she like would just like repeatedly, first of all, just like not be able to figure out which apartment was hers because she can't figure out the numbering of the floors. And then
yeah, I've been here for 7 years though, and sometimes I still try to go into A6 instead of A8.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Speaking from past experience, I've also tried to go into
the wrong place. And not even like drunk or anything. Just like, oh, tired and like.
Yeah, but even after years of living at a place.
Scaring the shit out of my neighbor, Lucy Scott, trying to get the keys in the fucking door.
But it's like every time they interact was like she was basically either.
Needed help.
Yeah, needed help with something and was not particularly gracious about it. And he was just like acting like super.
He was very nice about it, especially keeping his restaurant open and everything, which I mean, like, worked out, but you know.
Yeah, and again, it's a fantasy
without
it's
saying
fine,
anything,
but it definitely I could see that like he's this sort of just sketch of like a dream boyfriend figure, and I never believed it, but I found it totally charming. I mean, they also just found, you know, this like charming kind of like the perfect kind of actor for it, who's like obviously incredibly good looking, but like you know, has the right kind of just relaxed charm that like just seeing them on screen together. I mean, I think I'm generally just a sucker for on-screen romance unless it's like really bad, and I was like, this is fine, this is I you know, this is not particularly unique or believable, but this is fine.
I thought they sold it as a couple that is attracted to each other.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and again, you know, I guess there's just an element of, yes, you're two good-looking people in your probably 20s and attracted to each other. Great.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think they had like particularly amazing on-screen chemistry like some couples of romance television and film past, but like, yeah, I think you're right. They did the job.
I think the other thing that just did the job really well is that it made me really wish I was in Paris. Like it, and I understand that it's sort of a, even though they sort of make jokes about like dog shit and things like that, which certainly Paris is not unique in, as since two of us are currently in New York City. But like it's this fantasy version of Paris that they created is one that I would like to live in. And I was definitely like, oh my God, I got to go back to Paris. I should have done more when I was there. And I think that's part of the goal of the show.
Yeah. For all the stereotypes they dredged up and like you, it still definitely made it like, sure, they made French people seem awful and whatever. I think this is hard to say. In general, I think it's true that I'm going to make a horrible generalization. In Europe, people are not as nice overall, like on a day-to-day interaction. I don't think that's worse. I think it's generally better because there's less sort of like artificial pleasantry going around. Here they definitely like overdo it, I think, and make people like just sort of all downright mean, which is a different thing. But this looks good. Like this makes me want to go there and live there and be there, especially right now, I guess. But like, yeah,
maybe the slightly more nuanced, still not particularly nuanced, but a little bit more nuanced version of what you said is that I feel like as an American, I am used to this sort of, not like deference, but this sense of like, oh yeah, of course you only speak English and showed up with like very little knowledge about this culture you're coming into. There's this feeling that like, that people don't necessarily agree with, but they sort of understand that this attitude of like the US being the center of the world and that an American, this sort of like ugly American traveler, and they sort of, if they don't embrace it, at least they tolerate it. I think in Europe they tolerate it less than in other places, and in Paris they tolerate it least of all, and that's probably a good thing, even if it was definitely a shock. Like when I checked into my hotel and people, like I tried to check in English and they were like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah, I think that's a better way. It's kind of like if you looked at it from reverse, like why would anyone be nice to her, right? Like she doesn't seem to have gone out of her way at all to attempt to extend courtesy to them. So like what do they owe, right?
Yeah, and you know, there are characters who express that. Usually they're the less savory, you know, the less admirable characters who generally turn out to be kind of mean creeps in other ways.
or weird. Yeah, that's true.
But we should probably talk a little bit about spoilers, but are there any other things you want to say about the show before we get into spoilers?
No, I think it's good. I mean, I think the weakest part, sadly, is that side story. Like, I think they could have done something more with the Mindy character, and like what they did try to do just wasn't successful, so it left me feeling like, why was this even included? But like I really liked it. I really enjoyed her work friends and their interactions, so I thought the casting was really good as well, and it had some some really good casting where like really strong actors show up in really small parts. I mean, the Kate Walsh one we brought up, kind of like she's barely in it at all, and it's kind of like, why even bother using her? But she was very good, I think. And
who does she play?
She's the one who was supposed to go to Paris.
Boss.
Oh yeah.
Which I were Kate Walsh, I'd be kind of mad if they're like, hey, we want to hire you for this role. The good news is it's not a lot of work. The bad news is you're never coming to Paris, or at least from what I've seen. I don't know if that's true.
Well, I don't. Maybe she's just like in a lump deal with Netflix. She seems to be on all Netflix shows now. Like what the ones that
Umbrella
I
can Academy. Like an all inclusive.
Yeah,
arguably the best thing in Umbrella Academy.
13 Reasons Why. This. Academy. Umbrella Academy. Those are the ones off the top of my head.
Why did she play in Umbrella Academy? Why don't I remember
anything? She's the main, like, especially in season two, she's the main villain, I guess.
She's the head of the Time Traveling Assassin's Guild. All
right. I remember. I still haven't finished it.
She's come a long way since her...
Ever since you guys
quickly
told me
canceled
that
Grey's spinoff, whatever the hell that was called.
Juno is going to ruin the world again. I put me off a little bit. It's one of the downsides of doing the podcast without having finished something. I'm like, oh, I don't want to finish that.
Oh, no, it's
great,
good, though.
You just don't need to finish.
Yeah, that's that too.
Okay, so let's go into spoilers. So if you've not seen the first season of Emily in Paris and you don't want to be spoiled, you should stop listening now. The first thing I wanted to talk about was there's a specific episode called Sexy or Sexist where I think they sort of deal with this most directly, but this kind of thread running through the whole show of sexism and workplace behavior. Do you guys feel like the show handled that stuff fairly well or somewhat well?
They kind of just leave it as like, listen, this is France, so
yeah, exactly. It
was you're gonna like have to figure out alternate free solutions.
Yeah, it was like a get out of jail free card on like what would never happen in an American show right now, or if it did, it would be like a drama and it would mm-hmm. be about that, and yeah. like, you know what I mean. So it was interesting that it was just like, this is woven in. It's a thing here. And like Daryl said, like, you're not filing a ticket with HR on any of this. So like, yeah. what next? Right.
Yeah.
Figure it out on your own. And like the blurring of the lines too. Like, I think, you know, with Matthew from Pierre's nephew, I guess, who runs Pierre Gâteau's business.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she kind of is into that, right? And so that's an interesting one too, where there's like a kind of unrequited client interest ish and then there's a requited client interest, and there's not like a whole lot of distinction between the two other than, you know.
Yeah. And then there's the other guy, Luke, I guess, and he's just like inappropriate
all kinds of shit.
Yeah, and that's just flies, and you're just like, okay, well, you know. And yeah, she comes up with coping strategies, but they are not like file with HR, because I don't think there is an HR
right
person in this arrangement
either. I mean, you can't fire anybody. If there was HR, you'd be able to fire people.
That's
right?
A pretty funny moment where they're like, no, this is France moment. Like, you can't fire people.
The part where he was like, my friend is a lawyer, and he got fired, he threw his phone into the Seine. They couldn't reach him to finish the paperwork. Now he's a partner.
That was
I
really
like
good.
That. Well, it's also funny because like Luke is also the first one who's actually nice to her the office. So it like starts out, you're like, oh, maybe he's just gonna be like a good guy, and then like he starts like making some pretty interesting jokes. And
yeah,
I think he says Luke,
when she's not around, okay? Like, at least she's hot, and you're like, oh wait, you're just being explicit about like why. You were nice to her. And yeah, and the thing is, I think that guy has been in something previously by the director of MLE, which is why I recognize him.
Okay.
But he's very likable, so it's really hard not to. And the show doesn't like seem to chastise him for any of this stuff, right? Like, I think you're supposed to like him, but...
Right. Recognize that it definitely isn't endorsing it, and you have Emily saying that, like, no, don't do this. But at the same time, you're still supposed to like him.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I guess it's a question of whatever. Like, probably I should be more... concerned about how easily I accept all this stuff in the show, but like they do a big hand wave of like, it's France and I go with it, and then I'm in, right? So I allow that as the like Well, I'm going to forgive myself for enjoying all this stuff too, because I guess it's France, so it's fine. And yeah.
I felt like I just had a little like bing flag go up every time one of those things happened. And then like Daryl said, it was just like, oh, well, we're not doing that on this one, I guess.
I think like it doesn't do a particularly sophisticated or deep exploration of it. It just sort of just acknowledges that these issues exist. And, you know, I mean, I think in a show like this, you just couldn't deal with them seriously because it's not a serious show.
Yeah.
And I think I'm okay with that. I felt like that was fine. Like, again, it's not a reason to recommend the show, but I thought like it was a way of saying, let's acknowledge that this exists. We're not going to totally live in a world where these aren't issues, but that's not the focus of the show.
Yeah.
Right.
And she needs the intrigue. Like, it makes it more interesting that her, like, romantic choices are all entangled, right? Like, that's part of the show's whole appeal and has been part of every show this guy has made appeal, right? Like, it's always complex in this way.
It also layers in the idea that, like, and maybe I'm wrong about this because, like I said, 72 hours in Paris or whatever, but it seems like the show is using those not just to address that this stuff exists, but also to say, like, the lines are blurrier in France, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. With regards to, like, I mean, a good example is Antoine giving her the lingerie. Because on first reading, you're like, oh, he wants to shtup her, right? Like, mm-hmm. that's what is going on here. But I actually feel like by the time I got to the end of the show, I actually was more on his side. And he was just like, oh, no, like, I'm just, like, this is an actual just gift. Like, I have my hands full with my other women, and like, maybe it doesn't mean he wouldn't fuck her.
Yeah, I think that's probably there's would. A third possibility where it's like,
yeah,
I mean,
it's yeah. not like I would down obviously, for whatever, but it yeah. also wasn't like as like if an American client sent an American marketing executive lingerie, it's like a pretty much 100% situation where you know what's going on.
Yeah,
and this was like much more of like a 50-50 situation where you're like, it could also very well be a gift about your confidence and the way you approach things here in France and French culture, but yeah. also I'll do you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think there's also an angle where it's like there's an allowance because of their overall, like it gets back to the overall tension between like the American and French perspectives on things, and specifically on like life and work. It's like, you know, the work to live, live to work dichotomy.
Which is an actual line in the first episode.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I think they just take that a bit further. Like, it just extends to that where it's like, well, like, why wouldn't, like, this is all life going on around you. Like, why are you driving these distinct barriers when they're like this and is so much of your time spent, right?
And Sylvie's like, why would you talk about work at a party? And it's like, it's yeah. a work party. Like, what are you talking yeah, yeah, about? Yeah. And she's like, no, like, we don't do that. Or why don't talk about work at the dinner table, right? It's like, it's a working dinner. Like, what are we supposed to talk about? So, like, I think it's, like, part of the sexual harassment or whatever stuff that we're seeing happening is also, like, feeding into that, what Daryl just said, right? Like, work to live, live to work.
And it's, I mean... something that I feel like the last few years have really underlined for me, and like a lot of things we're saying about the French and about European culture generally, this is probably a radical simplification, but in the past I had thought of the French and Italian attitude towards sexuality as generally being much more healthy than the American one, just like less puritanical, more open, more liberated, and like it seems like the ways in which a lot of strands of their culture have dealt with the Me Too movement have sort of shown the dark side of that, of where you're just like, I don't see what the big deal is. I mean, which is essentially what you see in this show as well, is that like, you're like, this is sexual harassment or worse. And people are just like, no, it's just, why are you being such a prude?
Yeah, that's true. And there's also that comes up with the, she makes they just like graze it, but it is a issue that is like, pretty hotly debated and ongoing, is like the gender pronouns and the gender nouns in French, like the they used it as a campaign or whatever, like it turns into advertising. But yeah, there's a lot of people who do argue, like, you know, French people and academics, that like there's so much misogyny just built into the language itself at a structural level, and they at least address it. I mean, they spin it as like a cool, innovative campaign that Emily's come up with, but you know, she seems seriously struck by it, and that's something, right? And it does, so it's not totally saying they're right and everything is permitted. It's like, yeah, there are aspects of the attitude that are perhaps interesting and can help Emily and like her overall fulfillment and happiness, but there are parts of it where like no, like these things have gone too far, right? I think it again, it's a light show, so it takes everything lightly, but it doesn't like blanket forgive them, right? Which is, yeah, at least something.
All right, so this is a hard swerve, but since I have not finished the season, who does Emily end up with, at least temporarily, and how do we feel about that?
I think I can do this part.
Mm-hmm.
So she was veering towards Matthew as we get towards the latter episodes because, well, a couple reasons. Obviously, Gabrielle is with Camille, and that's uncomfortable. And two, then Gabrielle announces that he bought a restaurant in Normandy and is moving to Normandy and essentially breaking up with Camille. And originally Emily just says like, oh, that sucks, goodbye. But then she's like, oh, I should fuck this guy because when am I going to get another chance, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so she goes and does that. And then as the episode is ending, Antoine and Gabrielle are at the restaurant, and she learns that Antoine has decided to become an investor in the Parisian restaurant. So Gabrielle is actually staying, and Camille's like, did you hear? Gabrielle's staying.
Yeah, so it's complicated. Because at first she's like, ends. Oh, sweet, he's staying. This means it's great. And then she gets like a text from Camille, and it's like, oh yeah, I forgot. Like, this is still complicated.
Exactly.
It's also like good for her for the same reason. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's essentially how the season ends, is her like getting that text and kind of all of us collectively being like, this is not simple.
Yeah. But it's good because the like, it also has Antoine in there, right? And he's like holding the reins, like he's the power person that's caused this to happen too. But and you're still unsure about his eventual motive. Like it's still hanging there that maybe he wants to replace his current mistress with a new mistress or whatever. But yeah,
God, that would add a lot of drama to the situation, because Sylvie's already like, I friggin' hate Emily.
She hates it. But then at one point, the wife tells her, I approve, and right. It's very strange, like
super awkward.
Yeah, yeah,
I liked that whole thread though, that of like the wife and the mistress in France, and like how they don't necessarily, it's not like a super spoken thing, but they also like tolerate one another,
yeah,
and like,
yeah,
generally accept it for what it is, like particularly if they have eyes on, right, like, yeah, the lay of the land and what exactly is going on here.
Yeah, they put it very fun. I forget which one. And again, it's another instance where it's like, okay, this is probably oversimplified. But they just like treat it as absurd. I think it might be Julianne or somebody that like that she works with that treats it absurd that she would imagine there'd be monogamy. It's like, what? Like, why? What are you talking about? Like, that's crazy.
I also liked the line. I think it was Julianne as well, who was like, it's actually more this isn't the exact line, but he essentially said like, it's actually more fucked up to cheat, to flirt in front of your mistress than it is to flirt with your wife.
Right. Yeah. He can cheat on his wife with his mistress, but he can't cheat on his mistress, with somebody younger, something or other.
Yeah. There's also, so this is a great spoiler, but like one of my favorite parts of the show are, there's an episode where Emily goes to visit Camille's family in the country, right? And at the castle where they make champagne. And she goes to do a champagne tour. And she's been told ahead of time, like, oh, my brother, like, I'll set you up with my brother by Camille. And she goes and does this tour. And there's a real handsome, like, tour guide. And it turns out that's the brother. And then she ends up sleeping with him. And then they reveal, like, that's a second brother who's 17.
17-year-old younger brother, not the one she was supposed to get set up with.
Yeah. And then this comes out, like, at the dinner table with the family. And the family all just thinks it's hilarious. Like, they don't think it's a problem at all. They're just, no, like, they're
cracking up. And, in fact, the mom invites her into the, like, office. And it's like, I need to speak with you. And Emily thinks, like, oh, my God, I'm going to get charged with, like, pedophilia or something.
Yeah.
And the mom's like, I need to know if my son is a good lover. Like, I worry about my children's future.
Is he attentive? Like, it was like.
And she was like, wait, was this his first time? And she was like, oh my God, no. Did it feel that way? Like,
it was really, really good. Yeah.
I will say one small thing that I like about the show, and I don't want to give it too much credit because it's still mostly a white show, but I like that even in this fantasy Paris, it's not a totally white fantasy Paris, and they have characters of color. It's not a big deal, but, you know, it's a reasonably diverse cast.
Yeah, yeah. You're right. I think they could have gone further still, but yes, they do. They make some effort, right? But yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's a good show. It's like,
I liked
obviously
it.
Guilty pleasure, but good.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it, so I'm ready for season two. Oh, and you guys, this is off topic, but do you know what's coming soon?
What's coming soon?
The Crown season 4. Bum, bum, bum.
Oh, man. Gotta,
we're going to finally meet then. Diana. Yeah, you guys need to get your lives together. It's pretty rare I ask for something, but we're doing this. And we're doing it with you guys actually focused up, knowing what's going on.
And not just spend an hour complaining about the monarchy again.
Yeah, although that is a big part of reviewing The Crown, I feel like. But
so I don't have to, like, watch all the rest of it, though, right?
No, I feel like if you just watch season 4, I think that's probably good enough. But
okay,
here sweet. We go. Although Lovecraft Country is also finishing up, so we should.
Oh my god!
Do an episode on Lovecraft Country.
Yeah, we really should because it's so good. It's such a good show. It's astounding how good it is.
Astounding.
Yeah.
That's not a word you hear Daryl use a lot.
I would say it's a show that has many, many good moments and some occasional bad ones, but we'll get into that. We'll get into that. All right, there's a lot of things we could talk about, but we'll figure out what we're reviewing next week. I guess before we do that, I will just, as always, remind people you can email us at originalcontent@techcrunch.com. Let us know what you think of Emily in Paris or of this review. You can also subscribe on Apple Podcasts or any other podcast app. We also really appreciate positive reviews. And you can follow us on Twitter @originalcontent. Thank you for listening. Jordan and Daryl, have a great weekend.
You too.